This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 443, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 443. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and joining me as always is Josh Flanagan.
Hey!
And...
Hold on. There we go.
What was that?
That's beer. There we go.
Are you drinking a beer for the show?
I am. Fuck this week.
Wow. All right. Josh has got a beer and joining us. We've got a caller on the line from Philadelphia. You're on the air, caller.
I'm wondering if you'd like to take part in a brief survey.
That's Paul...
number.
Paul Montgomery, who mere moments before we were set to record lost all power due to a major storm that's hitting the east coast of the United States. So Paul is dialed in from his phone. We apologize for the audio quality. It's the best we can do on this short notice on this holiday weekend. So thanks for dialing in, Paul.
Happy to be here.
Do you have a beer?
I don't, but I wish I had one.
You should probably should.
I don't have a beer.
Paul was a good soldier. He's like... All right, is there anybody else you can call in the last minute? And we're like, no, man, we're doing this. We're doing this.
We're doing this. I'm in my office at work. Josh has got a beer. We're not delaying this.
Shit's just off the rails. I don't know.
We are iFanboy. We like comics. We read comics. Every week we read a bunch of comics. One of us picks the best book they read. We call that the pick of the week. We talk about that book on the podcast along with other books the week, other topics of interest, other goofy stuff. We'll make some jokes about Paul being on the phone. It'll be a fun time for everybody. Before we get to the show, quick reminder of warning.
Was I supposed to prepare phone material?
This is a review show. We'll be talking about things that happened in the books, the spoilers. So if you don't want to be spoiled, come back, pause the show, stop it, turn your phone off, turn your computer, shut it down, burn the hard drive, and then come back once you read your books. In the meantime, Josh A. Flanagan had the pick of the week.
Now everybody can get into my bank accounts. Yes, the pick of the week this week was Moon Knight, number 5.
Is your password just the letter A?
Yeah. I just figured like that's the security question. Like, what's your middle initial? Like, A. And they're just like, here you go. Here's the golden key.
Oh, jeez.
So, I read a lot of comic books in a short amount of time this week.
There's a lot of comics this week.
It was mainline. It was like I was carbo loading before a marathon, I assume.
Which is kind of what you did do.
Yeah. And at the end of it, I went, I don't know. I don't know what the pick is. And then I sort of started looking again. I flipped through everything. I was like, oh, it's Moon Knight. Like, Moon Knight was, there was a lot of really good books, but Moon Knight was the only one that when I got through with it, I said, I'm pretty sure Declan Shalvey needs to win an Eisner for this. That's what I thought.
Yeah.
In this series, this run, like when they go do the best artist or whatever, and that's not going to be for this year, it'll be for next year. But that's kind of what I thought. I thought, well, there you go. That's pretty much it. I didn't think that about anything else.
Well, it's funny because when you did announce the pick, I hadn't yet finished all my books. So yeah, I did throw a quizzical eyebrow, although I wasn't completely surprised because especially you and Paul especially have been really raving about the series, so I was not totally shocked. Especially, but there was a it was a pretty heavy hitter week, so I was a little tiny bit surprised. But then I actually read the issue after having seen your pick, and I thought, okay, that makes complete sense. I would have. It would have definitely been in contention for me, at least. This was definitely the best issue I thought of the series.
And well, I thought, you know, I really liked last month's, and I thought, well, geez, and then I really liked last month's. Is this just a fill-in for that? I thought, no, and I went through it again. This is better than last month's, which I really like.
No, this
and
is
I don't
the
even
best
like,
issue by far. And there's a reason why earlier in the day today, Josh, I IM'd you and asked if you, how far into Fargo you were, because this reminded me a lot of an episode of Fargo. And I don't know if you've seen that show or not.
Oh, yes. Episode 8,
six,
I'm going to say.
No, 8's the final episode, I think.
No, there's 10.
There's 10. I think episode 8 is the one with the extended building attack. And that really reminded me of this one, in which the story for this episode issue is that there's a girl's been kidnapped. Moon Knight shows up in front of this building in a stretched limousine and proceeds to make his way through the floors of the building, almost like a video game, to get to the top floor where the girl's being held, and just takes out guys along the way. And this was very vintagey Warren Ellis, too. I mean, it's a great showcase for Declan Shalvey, which you mentioned, but this is also sort of vintage, decompressed, badass Warren Ellis storytelling also.
I liked already, but I have really grown very accustomed to the format of this book, in that there's not a big thing. And it's interesting, because you hear people talk a lot of times about how people's attention spans are waning. I know mine is. But comics is almost the opposite of that. Comics is this constant, like, swirling, connected miasma of hyper-attention details all the time. And I like the simplicity of these, the same way that I liked, it reminds me of, oh, God, Snowtown, Warren Ellis, you know what I mean?
Fell,
exactly. Fell. It feels like that. Not in a copy way, but just like it's very refreshing. It's like having a perfect dessert.
It's vignettes.
It's just and you don't have to know a lot of stuff. And the thing is, like, I don't like Moon Knight. I don't care about him. And it's funny, I've seen comments like, maybe this means they'll make the Moon Knight movie or whatever. Like, I don't want any of that. I like reading these stories. The fact that it's a Moon Knight story is almost secondary. It's interesting. It works for it. It's not like it doesn't matter. But it's just in the midst of all of the other ongoing stories and things that are going on endlessly, forever, one thing leading to the next. This is great. Like, you enter late and you leave early and it's over. And then in the middle of it, you just get to see a smorgasbord of craft.
And Warren Ellis excels at these. He did that same format for Secret
Avengers.
Because
he doesn't have any attention span for it either.
He did it with Secret Avengers, where he did those one-and-done stories a while back. And he's really good at telling you a complete tale in short form. And you're right. I mean, comics excel in the long form. And we've seen a lot of comic writers aren't necessarily very good at telling one story in 20 pages because it's really hard.
Very hard.
And he's really good at it. And we've seen some other, the story of the assassins, all those people being assassinated, where all the story, the pages countdown was pretty amazing. But I thought this is a complete tale. Worked really, really, really well. And granted, most of it is violence, but it also tells a story through the violence. And then I thought the last sort of wrap up was pretty great. I mean,
It's totally simple. I mean, like, it's literally a video game. You go into the building, you get to the end of story.
You rescue princess.
Kill all the people in the beginning. You know, like, it's not super complicated, but it's in the way that it's, you fight Morris Day. That's important. And we checked on this. That is not, if you've read this, there's a man with a very suave haircut and some knives in a purple and blue suit. And my first instinct was, hey, that's Morris Day. I was not the only one who thought that, but it turns out that he was not supposed to be Morris Day. I advised artist Declan Shalvey to pretend as if it always was.
It should be. Now, Paul, you're a big fan of this book. What did you think of this issue?
When I saw that reveal, when he goes into the sort of the foyer of the building and you're looking up, and they in dialogue, they reveal that this is a six-story building. The girl is on, the fifth floor, and there's probably henchmen all throughout on various floors. But when you get that reveal, looking up at all these balconies overlooking the foyer, I was like, oh, it's Bruce Lee in the pagoda. That's a lot of fun, and going up to get to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar at the top, and So that's a really fun story. And, you know, it's like Dread 3D or The Raid.
Yeah.
It's just a great sort of subgenre of, you know, floor climbing, stairway violence, grindhouse thing. And it has a great title, too. I believe this issue is called Scarlet, which directly refers to the girl, to the red-haired teenage girl. But there's a lot of red coming out of people's nostrils and all kinds of wounds as he's punching and kicking and stabbing his way to the top.
This was
and it gets grisier and grislier, and you know, all culminating in the roof and our favorite superhero vehicle at this time, just dropping down on the last bad guy.
I thought this was really, really strong. I have no problem with this as a pick of the week.
It was just so, I guess it was just so refreshing and enjoyable in light of all of the other stuff that was going on. Everything else was trying to lift a thing along or start a new thing up, or, you know, and this was just, you just read it and there was nothing to it but to read it and to experience it. And that's really nice sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like I said, it just really wrapped in craft. I actually spent all this time because we've talked about the idea that Moon Knight in this, he's not colored.
Right.
That's not supposed to sound like a anti-segregation statement.
There's no color. There's no like value.
Yes, there's no value. It's all his suit is all lines. But in this one, he takes his jacket off, and so we see and he rolls up his sleeve, and we see his forearms. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. Like, I went back and I looked a lot because it's almost like a little bit of an optical illusion. I'm trying to find value in it, and I realize there isn't. It's just in the lines. I just found that really interesting visually to look at. You know, if none of this was colored and this was just the line art, you wouldn't notice that. Right. So it's a choice between...
Back in the first issue, he takes his mask off, and so you just see his regular face, and that is, of course, flesh tone and everything and full value. And when you see it, like his wrists going into his gloves, so... There is precedent for it, but here, just the forearms is a great look.
Yeah, it just worked. And, I mean, like, there's really something to be said about, I don't know if people know this, it's not a secret, I guess. Declan Shalvey and Jordi Belair are a cohabitating couple. They live together, they work together, I assume in some sort of Dublin slave den, where they just stand all day in front of Cintiq monitors and brushes. There really is something to be said about, like, people don't talk about creative team. People talk about artist, writer, creative teams all the time, and they're this like huge, powerful punch of this visual creative team. You know, in a way that you normally associate with pencilers and inkers, I guess.
Right.
I guess Frank Quitely and who is his colorist? I'm trying to remember.
Well, you think of McKelvey and Matthew Wilson.
Yeah, that's a good example. But it's just this really great creative relationship that has come up between them that just, like, it you can tell, like, they just know how to work for each other. And it's really refreshing. And we get to talk about Jordi Belair all the time because she colors so many great things. But this is, like, watching that collaboration go on, you know, with the framework that Warren Ellis provides for them. Has been one of the really fun parts about this book. And I know it's short-lived. I know that I saw somebody be like, that's it, this book's going to the top of my stack. And I was like, yeah, one more issue, actually. there's one more of them, but you know what? I will take six great issues over 12 okay issues. And I'm really glad that...
For Ellis and Shalvey, Jordy staying on colors past this. And then Shalvey's also doing covers, but anyways.
Yeah. It's, yeah.
I was really glad I got to, once it occurred to me, I was like, oh, we get to give a pick to this week. That's awesome. That should be a thing. So I'm glad that worked out.
So Josh, do you still hate Satellite Sam?
No. I wanted to add Satellite Sam to the list this week because I thought that, I don't want to say it righted the ship, but I felt reinvigorated by it. And I had actually left this off. This was the last book that I read. It was, and I totally left it upstairs. No, here it is. This is the last book that I read because I just hadn't been looking forward to it. And this, whatever it was, the mix of this book that I liked, this put it all together, I thought it was a really strong issue. It grounded me again in what was happening. It did a little more of that showing you what TV stuff is going on. They did the chroma key feedback loop thing.
Test, yeah.
And, you know, they're talking about standards and a little bit of cultural history where the writer is about to be outed badly. And so he tries to use it. I liked, like, the first, like, few pages of this were a powerhouse, I thought. You know, the whole thing was good. It was a good issue. I've liked Howard Chaykin before. I don't have a problem with him. But his work on this just clicks for me in a million ways. It doesn't look like anything else.
I still love this book. I assume Paul still does too. The only complaint I have is that I think there are some production issues in that often you can't tell whose balloons are whose.
Did you notice the bit with the phone conversation though?
Which scene are we talking about?
At some point, Guy, the TV writer, is on the phone, and the voice on the phone is indicated by there's like a little like sort of grayed out phone symbol behind the letters.
Yeah, and that's
yeah.
That's also the other problem is sometimes you can't tell who's who. Sometimes there's gray behind the letters, making it really hard to read. But that's a very minor complaint. I still think this is an amazing book. I love this was one of the stronger issues with the flashbacks to the war and how two of the characters met and the fact that the tech guy is secretly black or secretly half black.
I was thinking, I go, this does not work in any other book. There's no color in this book. Yeah. Like you get Zipitone. That's what you get.
And he's in danger of being outed too. And I liked the scene with him and the elevator operator.
That was great.
I think that this is full of such interesting characters. And you know, the driving force of this book is that it's a murder mystery, but I think it's very much like Sex in that it's just a drama about these characters. And in the background, there's this murder investigation. But really, there's as much about non-murder stuff going on in this book than there is about murder stuff going on.
I think also, I mean, and this really is sort of the most obvious thing in the world, but this is the same week that they released a Black Kiss special of something, which is basically Howard Chaykin's porno comic. Yeah. I don't know if that's how they phrase it, but it's a lot of fucking with demons, I think. I find this book way sexier than that.
Well, that one's more disturbing.
I know, but if you look at like the pinup pictures and the stuff that's in however it is that he's drawing like the lingerie and stuff like that's amazing. Mm-hmm. Like it really, this art doesn't look like anything else. Such a great showcase for it. Are you like me? Did you think this was a particularly good issue, or was I just able to pay attention this time?
I thought it was strong.
Yeah.
I think I agree with you that with you guys that it's the stuff other than the murder mystery that's more compelling, and I think the balance was more towards that stuff. I do like the fact that our main character is kind of playing detective to try to figure out what happened to his dad, but then he's not the best detective.
No, he's pretty terrible at it.
He's just a dude like trying to figure things out, and he's kind of blundering through this investigation.
Who also happens to be famous now, which is a problem.
Yeah.
Right.
I gotta say that there is no book on the stands today that I make more use of going back to the menu in the beginning to see who the fuck is talking.
Yeah. I just know, now I'm seeing what you're talking about now with the phone symbols and the behind that. And also, what I was complaining about before was the one of the characters is dying of lung cancer and he's coughing up blood. So every time he talks, there's blood spatter behind his dialogue, which is a cool idea, but I don't know if it works in practice as well.
I like the experimentation of
it. No, I definitely appreciate that. Now that I really look at it and see what it is, I have more of appreciation for it. I just found it hard to read some of it. But more importantly, the way they use the lines to indicate who's talking can sometimes get lost in the background colors because it's all black, white, and gray. But anyway.
It's very ambitious for a grayscale thing. Like, you know, if there were color involved, we probably wouldn't be remarking, you know, upon it that much.
Right. So I thought it was a really, really strong issue. Satellite Sam number 9. Action Comics 33, this was a very Superman-heavy week. We'll talk about another Superman book in a minute, but Action Comics 33 was the next chapter in the storyline in which Superman has been affected with Doomsday's virus and he's becoming Doomsday. This is Super Doom, Chapter 1.
I don't know if you realize, but there's actually a pretty good quality DC crossover going on, and I don't know that I've ever said those words. in Superman books.
Well, it's happened a lot in the past, but
it's been a lot of the distant past.
We also don't really like the Superman chapter of it, but that's neither here nor there. No longer part of the storyline. I think this is great. I love the fact that there's these very distinct worlds within these books. You know, Action Comics is
Superman and Lana Lang and Steel, and then Superman Unchained is Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, and Lois Lane, and Superman is Superman and the Daily Planet crew. I think this is
got a little confusing this week, but that's not really the artist's fault.
Yeah, I thought this was a great Aaron Cooter issue.
Mm-hmm. Yep,
looked really good.
That was my takeaway as well. Like, I didn't know that I'd ever say I have a new favorite Doomsday artist. But I like the way that Aaron Cooter draws Doomsday, and you know Superman's like wear Doomsday form.
Mm-hmm.
For what it is, I'm not wild about Doomsday, but you know I prefer their other villains. But for what it is, they're having a lot of fun with it, and I think Pac especially, his chapters are pretty inventive, and you know I like the way he writes Superman's interior monologue. And Lana's as well. I think that's the driving force of this book, even before this arc started.
Right. I think this is good. I think if you're still I don't know how long this is lasting, but it continues into Superman Wonder Woman, which is another great book. So I'm happy for the storyline to continue. Although at the very end of the page, the very end page is the splash page reveal of Superman Cyborg or Cyborg Superman. And I wasn't totally thrilled about that, just because it's just a reminder of all the problems that DC has continuity-wise. But
I kind of figured it was coming. Like, this is their opportunity to do the, like, I wonder if we're going to see...
Well, Superboy would be the only one left.
Yeah, and, like, that version of
Superboy. And then the Eradicator. We got a whole party coming, I guess.
It could all fall apart.
Sure, but for right now, it's fun, I think. I think it's really
fun. Yeah, I thought Aaron Cooter was very well represented in this. I thought he did this very well, and it worked. And the whole time, well, that looks nice. Well, that's you know, the nice sort of line art thing that's going on with this. It should be ridiculous, but it is compelling.
Mm-hmm.
The one place where I rolled my eyes a little bit, I don't like the Red Lantern Supergirl idea.
Oh yeah.
But again, for those concepts, he makes them work. You know, it's like even though I'm not in love with that idea. He takes it and runs with it.
I assume it happened in her book or some other place.
Red Lantern book, probably.
Did I miss it somewhere?
Probably in the Rage of the Red Lanterns book, right?
Or her own.
This may be a chart. Does she have her own? She can't have her own book and be a Red Lantern at the same time, can she?
Why not?
Because that sounds like market suicide.
Just allow another Green Lantern book out there.
So you guys don't know? Because that was my question.
I just rolled with it.
What's going on with this? Yeah. No, and that's fine, too. The thing that I don't remember, like, aren't the Red Lanterns all angry all the time?
And spewing blood on cats and things.
She seemed fairly, she had a bit of a sneer on. Mm.
Well, she's a teenager. She's more of a mopey angry.
Right. Right.
You don't understand. Go to Tosche Station. All right, who read Tech Jacket?
I did. Do you guys know what Tech Jacket is? Were you around for this?
It was a jacket.
It was an early Robert Kirkman story, I believe. If it doesn't predate Invincible, it is around that time. And he's shown up in the Guardians of the Globe. Is that it? Or Guarding the Globe? Whatever. And I wouldn't have read this, but our pal Joe Keating wrote on it. And I thought, well, I'll give this a try. It's kind of interesting, and it's kind of fun. The other thing that got me was Cary Randolph was the artist. And the last time I remember seeing him was on that that Boom series by was it Chris Robertson?
Oh yes, what was the name
Star?
Of that? Yeah, it was about the kid who was on Earth who was really an alien.
Yeah, princess. Mitch Gerrits was coloring
it.
Yeah, and his art works really really well for this. And it sort of takes place in this Invincible universe. Really good looking art. He's got, it was like a good big sort of galactic superhero story, and a father and son story, and sort of basic comic book stuff. You know, like, and it felt like sort of like an 80s comic book, like late 80s, early 90s, but pretty good. Guy's in way out of his depth, and he's super young, but he's got this big suit. It's Dark Hawk, basically, now that I'm saying it out loud. It's Dark Hawk and Dad.
My reaction to it was it felt like a 90s cartoon series, actually.
Okay, yeah.
Like when the bad guy shows up and is, like, watching him on the monitor, it's painted a bit broad.
Mm-hmm.
But I like it's interesting. I mean, it's this kid, and then have this, like, multi-panel, multi-page scene where he's talking to his dad about filling out unemployment papers, mm-hmm. because he gets paid to be a superhero, but his dad doesn't, to be like his handler.
If I had any complaints, the fact, like, in the beginning of the book, the dad looks older than he does now, later.
Yes, it does.
And I was confused by that. But most importantly, there was a page that was basically about donuts. and I, listen.
I figured that's why this is here.
I can't help but think I may have somehow just you know, subconsciously had something to do with this donut page. And
you're not the only one who likes donuts in the whole world.
I'm kind of the donut guy.
They're
in
kind
comics.
Of universally loved.
No, I'm
kind
the,
of
no,
dessert. Breakfast,
donuts are my
lunch
thing.
Thing.
I'm the donut guy. Let's just.
Josh is the donuts darling of the comics internet.
That's what I'm saying. If you're at the comic convention and you're like, who's the donut guy? If I was at that convention, which I'm probably not.
You didn't invent the love of donuts. I would think Joe Keating loves donuts. That's all I'm
saying. No, he likes beignet, some French version of that donut. I liked it. I was like, oh, this is a donut. His dad basically says, you know, I know you've been trying to be healthy because your girlfriend's coming, but hot damn, buddy, sometimes you just need to eat a donut. And I was like, yeah, you do. You understand. You know about these donuts. Christ, I want a donut tomorrow.
Now,
I want a donut right now.
Paul, you're probably the biggest Marvel Cosmic fan of this group currently on the phone.
Yep.
This was a good week for you, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great time to be a fan of Marvel Cosmic. You know, they've got there's a Nova book out there, there's a Rocket Raccoon book, and so this week it's Rocket Raccoon number one by Scotty Young with art by Jean-Francois Ballou, and the color work is gorgeous. And if you get the
colors by Jean-Francois Ballou.
Is that, what did I say?
You said the art by.
Oh, color art, yeah. I mean, that's what I meant, color art by. So they're a great tag team, and there's some good wrestling in this with Groot wrestling a many-tentacled beastie on an alien planet. And it's very madcap. It's very Looney Tunes and very, very Scotty Young. And
Scotty Young's a great artist to draw a book full of alien creatures. I loved just looking at the different kind of faces and different constructions. I mean, I'm not a Marvel Cosmic person. I'm not a Guardians of the Galaxy person. I'm not certainly not a Rocket Raccoon person. But I did really like looking at this book.
Did you catch the Southern Bastard in the audience?
I did not.
I caught it on Jason Latour's Instagram feed, but he noticed it. I was like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah. In the crowd of the wrestling match, it's not Earl, but it's just a guy. It says South.
With a jacket, and it says, like, and it says
South Bast. It's all
Bast.
Sort of cut off.
Yeah.
That's nice. Because this is a pretty big book.
Yeah,
there is.
If you get the digital deluxe version, there's a bunch of like process stuff in the back, and you can see that like Scotty knows that that Ballou is going to add some really great color work into it, and that's a big part of the overall effect. And you see how kind of spare his pencils are, but he knows that there's going to be color going in.
I mean, basically, what you're saying is that when he hands in the penciled pages, they're basically a series of rectangles and stick figures. I mean, that's what we're talking about here.
That's the secret.
Yeah.
But it is a very interesting look, and I thought that was cool that they showed the pencils, the inks, and then the finished colors.
I think what I liked about this was the energy, the constant sense of motion.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there was a lot of just sort of movement. You know, then there was stillness, like when they're sitting in the audience, but sort of when the action kicks off, everybody starts moving. Which was a thing that I actually really liked about, for some reason, this reminds me of it, I think it's Rocket's outfit, is the Fear Agent.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Fear Agent had that. This actually feels like a silly animal version of Fear Agent.
Actually, you're really right about that.
To a certain extent. He's got the little orange outfit on. He's surrounded by all these aliens. He's like, there's moving, there's blasting, there's, it feels like that.
He's in over his head.
Yep. Which is a very good and familiar feeling. There needs to be more comics like this, and I don't want to say it's unfortunate, but it's interesting that it takes a person like Scotty, who is, you know, he's sort of singular, to be able to get a book like this.
Well,
off the
Scotty
ground.
Plus the movie coming out in 3 weeks.
Yeah, doesn't hurt. So, but if he did this book on its own, I mean, still it'd be, I don't know who could say, but you did a book like this, people would be
really
nuts
fun, and I think there's going to be a lot of people having seen the movie going to be going back for these issues and capture a lot of the fun of what it looks like that the character is going to be like just based on the trailers, what we've seen so far. Another thing based on the Guardians of the Galaxy movie, the Star-Lord of the comics is getting closer and closer to being that Chris Pratt.
Yes.
You're kidding me.
And, you know, he had that weird motocross, like, blue and yellow costume when the new Guardians of the Galaxy book launched, was it last year or the year before, and I wasn't wild about that. Now he's just basically in the trench coat, and he's got, it's the same design. It's the closest, you know, version of the Marvel Cinematic Universe costumes to comics transitions as we've seen. And it's not nearly as wonky as, you know, trying to make Cap look like he looks in the movies. So, yeah, I think it's, what is it, Legendary Star-Lord number one?
Who's the team behind it?
Sam Humphries and Paco Medina.
That's right. And a lot of fun. And just like, it, you know, if you like that kind of Han Solo, Indiana Jones kind of vibe to Star-Lord, which is new. I mean, like the Abnett and Lanning Star-Lord was a little bit different. Wasn't nearly as much of a rascal as this one is.
All I see is Chris Pratt from Parks and Rec. It's yeah. Literally all I see. When I read the version of this character of him, not necessarily a bad thing, but it's what I see.
Yeah, but the big takeaway for this is you get a surprise cameo from Kitty Pryde. When Star-Lord is in a jam, he calls Kitty Pryde, and it's basically the, you know, the Princess Leia, like, blue hologram.
Well, they had a bit of a flirtation in the all-new X-Men book crossover with Guardians of the Galaxy. Yeah.
Right, so that was, it was a question mark whether, you know, is she going to have any involvement, but I thought that was a nice pleasant surprise this week that she popped up, and I kind of hope that it's a running gag that, like, every month he gets into a jam and calls Kitty and she can't possibly be bothered.
So Ellen Page is going to make a cameo in the movie is what you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
I don't see that happen.
Rights reasons, we can't do that.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, real quickly, we want to know... Let you know how you can help iFanboy by going to ifanboy.com/Amazon. That's where you can go if you're making your Amazon purchases. There's a little link there to the main page. And what that does is it gives us a little piece of all your purchases that you make, and it helps us keep the show going, keep the lights on. Doesn't take any money out of your pocket, only out of Amazon. So we appreciate that.
Why are the lights off?
Because it was a hurricane. I don't know. What's going on with you? You tell me why the lights are off. And then more directly, you can go to ifanboy.com/registration. That's where you can become an iFanboy member for $3 a month or $30 a year. That's how you can help the show directly. And we appreciate everyone who does that. You can also donate any amount you want there. And we've discussed how if you are a billionaire, we'll take any donation with as many zeros as you want. We will not turn it down. So thank everyone who does that. We really appreciate everyone who helps keep the show going. And speaking of keeping on going, Thor God of Thunder 24 was the epilogue of The Last Days of Midgard last month, we thought was the wrap-up to that story, but Jason Aaron has been wont to do these epilogue issues with his big storylines, and this was a really great. I liked the Augustin Alessio art a lot.
Yeah, I thought it was good. I feel like the story, I don't know if it needed it, but it was really good to have.
Mm-hmm.
It felt very final, didn't it, at the end? It was like, oh, that's... could be the end. Like, if you were going to walk away from this now, you could do that here.
The book, sure.
Yeah, it's actually going to be a little bit of a hiatus, I think, because there's going to be a Thor-Loki crossover.
Yeah,
so it's going to be a little while before we get back into, you know, this particular thread.
We have the original Sin miniseries for the next couple of months or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But I liked this a lot. I liked... you had sort of opposite stories here. You had Thor coming to terms with what happened with Roxanne and the Asgardians abandoning Midgard once again, but not before Thor leaves his house there. For
they abandoned the last vestiges of J. Michael Straczynski's storyline, and good riddance.
He finally
got rid of it.
The town is destroyed, but Thor leaves his personal castle there so they can all live together like a giant reality show.
What could go wrong there?
But then in the future, Old King Thor has been reconstituting the planet with his granddaughters, and they've been making rivers and naming them after Thor's friends and loved ones. And then we cut to Galactus on Mars, ready to consume Mars, which I don't know why he didn't do before. No one's going to defend Mars.
Why didn't – when they named the – is there a Roz character, or is that Jack Kirby's
wife? The girlfriend.
Oh, she's Roz?
Yeah.
Oh, that's also Jack Kirby's wife. Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. I just put that together.
Yeah.
She's just another lady in a S.H.I.E.L.D. outfit. I don't. They're, you know.
She's the second main character in the book.
I just don't know the name. I don't know.
That might be what she's named after.
Yeah, no, that's cool. That's what I'm saying. I just put that together. Yeah.
And then Galactus gets attacked by something, which I sort of. So is born the Butcher of Worlds. So I don't know what's happening there. I assume we'll get more of that. But I thought this was great. If you recall the last wrap up issue, we dealt with Jane having cancer and Thor going all around the world and righting wrongs after he had dealt with the God Butcher. And
do you think he got attacked? I thought that he was turning into some, like, he was combining himself with the God Butcher, and now he's like Super Butcher.
Well, he was attacked by this black gunk. I don't mean like.
He's like overwhelmed by it.
He's a Black Lantern Galactus.
Basically.
Yeah. It's what Gore, when he was just a regular alien, he found those two like fallen gods, and the Necro Sword, and that's what Old King Thor used to stop Galactus in the previous issue. So, it's it's opening up Pandora's box. And probably gonna have huge ramifications in the future.
Yeah, good issue. I Captain America 22. I was sort of losing a bit of interest because I wasn't really digging the Nick Klein art on the book, and mostly for that reason. But this issue, Carlos Pacheco came back on and instantly rejuvenated my love of the book.
I think the thing that was interesting for me in this, there's a couple of things now that I'm looking at it. I was like, oh, I forgot Cap's old.
Yeah.
And he's going to be for a little while. I mean, Remender's had this real good habit of like picking something up and sticking with it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, even if it's just for an arc or so, it's better than that arc of Oz where they were old. So that was very specific. There was a scene here with Jet Black and Sam Wilson that I sort of came out of the blue. It was pretty interesting. I really liked the stuff in the old Avengers mansion with sort of the basic Avengers. And all the threats have built up. You know, the stories that you thought were over have come back. And it's just sort of classic comic booking.
Yeah, I thought the dynamics between Iron Man, Thor, and Bruce Banner before he's Hulk was great in the mansion. And Tony not wanting at all to revel in the nostalgia of the place. And Thor
Rick Wright's a really good... Tony Stark that is very Downey based, but still, like he writes, I was like, that's a very spot on sort of dialogue and character sort of rendition from him. That was really good.
And I like that Arnim Zola is not taken seriously at all until they realize he's got a giant army of mutant people with him. But I'm psyched about Cap again, which is nice.
How does the Red Skull drink without lips? Anyway,
listen.
Moving on.
Superman Unchained number 7. I don't know when the last time this issue came out or an issue of this series, but I really did quite like this a lot. And I like it mostly because I think that Scott Snyder has a nice handle on the character voices, especially, and it's not really fair. He writes Batman regularly, but I thought his Batman in this issue was really great. I like that he's got a bit of an edge and a bit of a personality to him, that he doesn't just speak like a justice robot. You know, he has a bit of a dialect to him, which I like.
Mm-hmm. I think that that's a thing that people do particularly well. It comes out when he's with Superman, which I think is it's savvy to sort of realize that. But like Superman's the guy who he has a rapport with. He's the guy he doesn't need to have a front with.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what I didn't like a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
All right, you remember when you were a little kid and you wanted to get a Batman or a Superman action figure, and that was always really hard to find because they never had just a normal one.
Right.
It was always like Arctic Attack or Super Electric, version or whatever. And this felt a little like that. I was like, I keep looking at these, like, why was, Batman's in the other costume and Superman had a weird costume. And I was like, this just reminds me of action figures I didn't want. We'll get you a Superman. Well, not really. It's not the one. Battle Damage He-Man.
I get what you mean. I like how just completely insane Snyder's General Lane is.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Just attacking the Fortress of Solitude, and his dialogue is just he's really scenery chewing.
Yeah, it's great. A lot of fun. I think the character work in the story is pretty good.
Completely like over the top bonkers issue, and I kind of like the sort of excess of it.
Mm-hmm. So now Miles Morales, The Ultimate Spider-Man, number 3. What I liked about this issue was that Miles is kind of a dumbass because he's a teenager, and almost all teenagers are dumbasses. So he decides he's going to tell his girlfriend that he's Spider-Man because he doesn't want to lie to her. And she has a very sensible reaction. She turns on her heels and runs.
Not even a word.
I really liked that. I thought that was a very real moment on multiple levels.
This Green Goblin is very powerful.
Well, We don't know what he is.
Did you spot Marquez and Bendis here?
Yes, Marquez and Bendis as the two cops.
I spotted Marquez first, and I was like, oh no, that's Bendis next to him. That's fun.
I just think I loved just the realness of it. Like, he's dumb. He thinks it's a good idea to tell his girlfriend that he's Spider-Man. And not
he's idealistic, which is right. Sweet.
Well, that's how teenagers are. They're dumb.
No, but sometimes they're not. They're not like the I don't tend to think of teenagers as super idealistic. So I like that he's really trying hard to do the right thing, but he has no life experience and he doesn't know how.
There's also another little hint here about the future, in that in the police station, there's a guy in a dressed as Captain Marvel and is ranting that the worlds are all going to converge and there'll only be one universe, which has been the rumor for quite a while that that's happening relatively soon with the Marvel books. But we'll see if that's actually just a nod to the Mysterio or a clever little.
I thought that was. I didn't realize that was like a person. That was a man in a suit. I just thought, they made that character different in this world.
No, that's a man in a suit. It's a man with a wig on.
It's a lot of characters to. Yeah. And he has a bulge. So there's that.
We'll see if that's actually what happens.
Good issue. They've all been very good.
I was surprised there's only three. I feel like there've been more of these, but
well.
They keep renaming the title. Yeah,
it does feel like one.
Yeah. So those are the books that came out this week. You can go to fanboy.com/nothing, and you can talk about this book as well as the other books of the week. And
you can go to the post for this podcast and do that.
Yeah, you can find the show post there, and you can talk about these books, other books, anything else at ifanboy.com. Now let's do some listener stuff, some listener questions.
A couple of Brian, those. I got a little beer burp going on there. Excuse me. Brian wrote, I'm not used to this stuff.
Are you really drinking beer?
Yeah, totally am.
What beer?
Guinness.
Wow, what the fuck, man? Go ahead, continue. I'm so confused.
The last bit of Guinness, though, like sort of that last chunk after you get through the curve of the glass, it's awful.
Not good. But you hope to be drunk enough by that point to not notice. Okay.
Yeah. Brian says, I've heard you guys mention that you don't keep a lot of your floppies around and mainly stick with TPP and hardcovers. But even that can get out of hand. How do you guys know what to keep? Obviously, you're going to hold on to stuff you plan reading again, but what do you decide to keep? Do you guys ditch the bad arcs that are in the middle of great runs, like Daredevil Shadowland? Or does any OCD take over? And we haven't talked about this in a while, I realized. Mm-hmm. So...
We should reiterate, if there could be a new listener, every show could be friends first, that none of us keep our single issues, right? Paul, you don't keep yours, do you?
Nope.
Yeah, so we all don't keep our single issues. We get rid of them. But I do keep trades, and I have a fairly 3-bookcase-worth trade wall, which...
You're never going to get rid of books in any form ever. That's sort of your...
My goal one day is to have a giant library room of not just comics, but, you know, books. So... And I don't keep all the trades I get. I get a lot sent to me, too, from publishers. I don't keep all those. I keep all the trades of series that I like. Mm-hmm. Lately, there's a lot of Image trades on my shelf because there's a lot of great Image books out. But, I keep stuff I want to read again and also books I like. If I don't like a book, I don't keep the trade.
Most of us read issues digitally at this point, mm-hmm. and we all do. Most issues, I guess, is what I meant to say.
True.
So there aren't issues around. And I now have stacks of issues that I just don't know what to do with. Like, part of me is like, well, I could arrange them into arcs and sell them, or I could just...
I give a lot of them to charity.
Yeah, well, the thing is, you know, most of the issues I have are Image, and they're mostly not good for kids.
Well, they're not kids' charities. I give them to a charity, and they do whatever they want. They sell them, and they use the money for their charities.
Serve charity.
Hmm. But I also... So for the stuff I read digitally, and if I really like the run, then I will then go buy the trade to have in my bookshelf and read again.
Are you a rereader of trades ever, though?
Yeah, not as much as I used to, but I certainly do.
Because I, you know, like, it's the oldest man thing in the world, right? But, you know, like, since I have kids, like, I don't buy a lot of trades ever because I just don't have time to fit them in. I've been reading the same 2 books for, like, 2.5 years. So, like prose books. So, like, it doesn't... I've been reading... Everything I read is pretty much what comes out weekly for the most part. Every once in a while, like, I went back, I read Preacher a couple of months ago, and then I read all of Hellblazers, all of Ennis's Hellblazer for a while. But, like, other than that, like, I don't... I think the only book that I've bought was the last Parker book. Like, that's the only comic book that I bought in a really long time.
I'm sort of I've sort of cut back on just buying like straight up trades. I'm still buying a lot of stuff, but it's mostly like OGNs, mm-hmm. stuff that I didn't have an opportunity to buy in single issues in the first place. And then, or like I just got the latest Mark Waid Daredevil, like the big hardcovers. What I'm trying to keep is like the more deluxe stuff, so it's like a nicer book. So I'm trying to get rid of a lot of my flimsy, you know, 4 or 5 issue paperback collections, mm-hmm. especially if I can, you know, get them in a nicer format, like the Why the Last Man deluxe edition.
I find the smaller ones are good for lending out, though. I've been lending out a lot of them to people.
That's true.
And it's easier and nicer just to give them the paperback trade than it is, you know, here's your giant hardcover.
I'm always looking for opportunities to give them away to friends, and they either, you know, already have them or...
I have no friends like that.
Yeah. I just gave Mike Romo a stack of about 18 trades to read that he had been falling back on, so I give them out a lot, too.
Yeah. I would. I just, there's no one.
Let's do a voicemail.
Okay.
Hey, Sandberg, this is Rick from Minot, North Dakota. I've only been with comics since about the time the New 52 happened, but I recently subscribed to the Marvel Unlimited app, and I'm just curious, to catch me up on everything Marvel there, could you guys recommend your top 3 or top 5 favorite Marvel stories? What do I have to read to know the ins and outs of Marvel? Thanks, guys. Bye.
Paul, or Josh, or either one of you, I thought maybe Paul had checked it out. Have either of you checked out Marvel Unlimited?
No.
Check out what?
Marvel Unlimited?
Not a lot, no.
I was just curious how wide and deep it goes in terms of what's available.
It is my understanding that it's been greatly improved in the time from when it was announced, and now if you wait around 3 or 6 months or something like that, it stays pretty current.
Yeah, no, I was more curious how far back it went. I realize it goes...
How far back?
It knew it was added. I'm just not curious how much it is in the past.
A friend of mine just read, like, the first 12 years of Ultimate Spider-Man mm-hmm. in, like, 4 days.
Jesus Christ.
And I was just like, putting that in perspective. It was like, that they worked on that for, like, 12 years of their life. Like, you know?
Yeah.
And just a couple days. So you can go down a rabbit hole there.
All right. Well, let's just assume that everything's there, and if
yeah,
it's not,
I think
we'll
that's
apologize.
The best way.
Yes. So I would just start off with that. I would say Ultimate Spider-Man.
I hadn't thought about that, but that's a really good answer, and I would also pair the Ultimates with that.
Yeah. So you've got 12 years worth of comics there. You can read that story is a through line from way back issue 1 in the year 2000 up to this very week. You've got Spider-Man stories that's 14 years. So
yeah.
That's a lot.
If you like the really long ones like that, if you really dig that, then I think Bendis's Daredevil is probably a really good way to go.
Mm-hmm.
And then I, you know, the first story that came to mind for me when you asked this was Brubaker and Epting's Captain America. I mean, mm-hmm. that's probably hands down my favorite Marvel story of the last decade or so.
Yeah,
I think.
I would say going back a little bit into the. Not the modern era so much, but the last era, I would say Infinity Gauntlet is one of my favorite event books. And
yeah.
there's thematic things that are going to be showing up in the movies. And it's just a really great Marvel universe-spanning story that you can read without really knowing anything about anything.
He did actually ask, he said, what do I need to be caught up now, which is... No offense, it's just not necessary. Like it's just it isn't. So don't. I wouldn't worry about it like that. Like I want to know what's going on and be up to speed.
You
just
can.
Read the really good stories because it's always changing what it is, and so it doesn't matter. And the way that Marvel structures now, like every time they restart, you should be able to start there and you're fine.
Right.
I think Paul, you'd probably say the Thor, God of Thunder.
Yeah, Thor God. That's exactly what I was thinking. Like I'm sure you can go back and start from the beginning on Thor God of Thunder at this point. One of the best Thor runs ever, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Thor Mighty Avenger, too. I mean, that's an out-of-continuity thing, but it's still a lot of fun.
Astonishing X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
The Joss Whedon, John Cassaday arc. That's probably... It's not probably. It is a very good place to start if you want to read X-Men.
The Clone Wars?
No. Don't listen to what that man just said. I would read if you like. Well, that's a little in deep, but it is very good. I would say find Old Man Logan by Mark Miller and Steve McNiven. That's one of my favorites.
Kurt Busiek and George Perez's Avengers, which was
very nice.
The book that sort of brought the Avengers back to prominence and to started the road they're on now to becoming the most popular books at Marvel, because at the time they weren't, the X-Men books were. There's a lot. I mean, there's a lot of good stuff out there, and just sort of poke around and see what you like and the characters you're interested in.
I'm gonna make one more suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
Paul Jenkins and Jay Lee on an Inhumans 12-issue maxi series from the late 90s.
You haven't had a chance to mention that in a long time.
I haven't, but it's a very nice introduction to characters that are very important right now.
And we sort of stayed in the modern era. I just assume most people will like that. I mean, of course, if available, I don't know if it is. There's always all the original Kirby, Lee, Ditko books, Joe Simon. I mean, those are all, if they are there, they're worth checking out. I like them. Not everyone likes reading the 60s stuff. But or the stuff from the 70s, there's Agent Shield and Doctor Strange. There's all kinds of, and again, I don't know what's available, what's not. So that's why I'm trying to stay.
There's no shortage of really good things. I try to give you stuff that'd be a little easier for the modern reader to sort of get into. Mm-hmm. Once you get through some of that, and you want to go back and see what came before, see the antecedents, see the history of where it all came from. Amazing Spider-Man and Fantastic Four are kind of where you have to go.
Yep.
I think to start, but that's no small thing.
So there's a lot of stuff there for you, Rick, and people I see talking about online who are subscribers love the app.
Yeah, yeah. It seems like a good deal.
If we ever stopped, I'd probably check it out and maybe read my book 6 months late and just sort of have a place to access everything. It'd be pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's almost overwhelming. It's like that Netflix thing. We're like, what are we gonna? If you don't make that list, what are you gonna do? Where do you start?
Even then, I'm like, I look at the 200 things on my streaming list, and I go, you know what? I'm just gonna go to bed.
I'm constantly pruning. My favorite thing on earth is to watch a thing, and then when it's over, hit remove. I love that. That's checking things off your list. It's great.
Let's get another email in. This is from Kay, and Kay says, I'm a girl, and I listen to your show because it's one of the very few, mostly non-sexist comics podcasts out there. And when you guys do slip up, you're pretty good about calling yourselves out on it. I'm curious what you think about Rick Remender's decision to suddenly age up Jet Black Zola so she can lose her virginity to a drunk Sam Wilson. Frankly, I find this so disgusting and offensive that I can barely put it in words. Remender's played up Jet's underage sexiness in a really creepy way the whole series, and then poof, she's just magically old enough to legally have sex, so it's okay. So it's okay with a question mark. This is, of course, referring to this week's issue of Captain America.
Now, normally, I don't think we would touch this with a 90-foot pole.
There's almost no way to win here.
But I'm drinking. So,
this is not me, and I'm pretty happy about it.
Yeah, this is like a little, I want to see if I can navigate this unwinnable field. And I know I can't.
I'm just saying,
but
it's not me who's the one drinking and possibly getting in trouble. I'm just happy I'm not that one to this.
My first instinct was that I don't remember anything in the story about her being a kid. I know that the boy was a kid, and she was an older sister.
Mm-hmm.
The kid was 11 or so. You know, I don't know how old this. I don't know what the age of consent laws are in Zola's.
I will agree, and I don't know, Paul, how you feel, but I've never read her as an underage person. I've read her as someone in her 20s the whole time.
Just generally young adult,
Yeah.
So, taking that out of the question, I don't believe there is anything statutory about it. That scene in particular, I don't know. I don't see any of that. I don't see any coercion.
She was the aggressor.
I see two characters who made decisions. If anything, Sam was drugged.
Yeah.
And he will, you know.
She was forcing the alcohol on him, actually.
Which is in some, it's assault in some states, by the way. I remember that because I was a college RA. that's illegal. But I don't know. I did not read it that way at all. I mean, she's young, but I didn't think she was a kid. Also, she is a warlord. so she can hold her own and stuff.
Well,
and,
I think the main thing is I didn't. Now look, I don't know. I may have missed to somewhere which her age was mentioned, but I never saw her as, even from the beginning when Romita was drawing her, as someone who was under the age of 18. I always saw her as someone in her 20s.
Yeah.
Now if she's not, then that's obviously a problem. But I don't see. Knowing Rick Remender like I do, and knowing they just know what they would casually put in, this isn't the 80s anymore, and Deathstroke and Terra, they wouldn't. I see no one casually inserting a underage sex encounter into a comic in this day and age, especially not one owned by Disney,
and a character who was just prominently featured in it.
Yeah, there's no way that would happen.
So I think it's possible that your read on the character prior to that was. Mistaken?
Maybe it was just like a given panel from the way, you know, Romita drew her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I mean. Like you get a first impression of a character and you think, oh, she's this. But
She looks, you know, like a little bit more like lithe and taller, you know, with the new artist. But
that is not, by the way, a sensible outfit. The strap outfit she wears. There's a panel early on where she's like just hanging out in that.
I think
we can all agree on that. The costume is a bit ridiculous.
Yeah, the costume is totally ridiculous.
Completely.
She needed what they needed to do was when she came out of Dimension Z into the quote, real world, she should have gotten different clothing. But
also, Sam Wilson's apartment is ridiculous. It's
kind of Shield salary, but it's complicated. I don't. The question is she underage or not? If she's underage, it's a problem. If she's not underage, then it's less of a problem. I don't see it as a problem if she's not underage.
But, seems very consensual. Everyone seems happy.
But
Sam was drunk.
Nothing really we can do unless we find out for sure. And I can't imagine in a million years that they would do that, have that scene.
Yeah,
play
and
out.
I think all we can do is be honest in that it didn't occur to any of us. And then sort of looking back on it, I mean, I don't see it. But yeah. You know, that doesn't mean that there weren't cues somewhere that.
If we missed them, I'm willing completely to admit that I'm wrong here. If we missed some sort of reference to her being 16 or something like that, but I don't think that happened, or some reference to her being aged up. I don't. She didn't get aged up when Steve did she? I don't remember that.
Is happening. She human?
I assume.
Zola was a human, but he's a robot. Human.
She wasn't aged up, was she?
She might have been grown in a tube, and therefore maybe she was aged.
No, what I mean is when Steve was aged to an old man, she wasn't there and didn't get some sort of byproduct aging.
I feel like she's the same as she has been since they got there. But I feel like they've also been back for a while.
Not that long. Either way, I think we can all agree that she needs a new costume.
Oh, sure. So, sure, that one where they're sitting on his couch and like her, she's got the side under boob going on. It's just
all four of us, the three of us and Kay, will probably all agree, be on the same page for that one.
Yeah, but certainly.
Thank you, Kay, for writing this in. We appreciate your take on this. And thank you, Brian. And thank you, Rick, for the voicemail. Kay and Brian, email us at contact@ifanboy.com, which now is working again. So you can email us. We'll get that email, and everything is all hunky-dory. Well, as soon as we wade through all 10,000 emails we transferred over from our old system, which is going to be lots of fun.
Don't hold your breath.
So we may not get back to you. We used to answer every email. I don't know if that's going to be possible anymore. We have to figure out which ones have been answered, which ones haven't. Our whole system is busted, so we may just call email.
Moving forward, like new emails.
Email bankruptcy, but continue to email us at contact@ifanboy.com. The point is that we may not get to your old ones.
Now it's a merit system.
Yes. So now.
Now your email has to be very good.
You can also leave us a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS 326-2697. We got a bunch of good ones this week on those. Thanks to everybody who called us in. Thank you, Rick, for doing that and getting on the show. And keep it 30 seconds. Tell us where you're from and who you are. And that's how you get on the show and into the fun and the madness and apparently get your answer from a drunk Josh Flanagan. I don't know what's going on anymore. This is
I'm not drunk. My hands are a little warm.
How's your face?
It's sweaty, but it's fucking humid. So that's
Paul,
not really
what is
my
happening?
Fault.
What
is happening? Are you drinking?
I have some water.
At least that's normal.
All right. It's very humid. I mean, technically, we're all drinking all the time.
Head over.
I don't think you understand how humid it is over here. I know that you don't have humidity anymore.
It's not that long ago that I lived there. You know, I remember. Actually, told someone today how.
Oh, I'm at the gross part of the beer. Ugh.
How in August you couldn't even go outside because it was awful. Head over to ifanboy.com. Comment on this show. answer anything we've talked about here on the podcast, talk about books for the week we didn't get to talk to, talk about books we did get to talk to. That's all happening on ifanboy.com.
And I have to scroll down. I was ready.
Let's see if you could remember what it is. The second point like, is in the end.
Whenever I hear silence on the show, I go, oh, I fucked up again. Follow iFanboy at twitter.com/iFanboy and facebook.com/iFanboy. And if you're following those and you happen to be looking at the right time, you'll be able to see what the pick of the week is before we do the show. As soon as whoever it is can manage to read through all the books, we'll let you know to preview it so that you can be prepared to listen to the show at your convenience when it comes out on Sunday. You can follow us individually at J.A. Flanagan, at C.L. Kilpatrick, and at Fuzzy Typewriter. Now it's time for Paul.
Yeah, and if you dig this kind of thing, you can write us a review in iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. Don't base it on the audio quality of this particular episode. So give us another episode or two, or go back and listen to a previous episode. This is your first, and you can judge it on that.
What I see here is three scrappy guys. No. We're in the Champions League is what we are. Is we're three guys and we said, God, this could go badly. We could bring in somebody else. We could delay. No, it's not what we did. We played the game with the tools we were given.
It's true.
Made it work.
We get out there.
You don't see other podcasts doing that. They say, oh, you know, it was no show this week. No, it was a power outage. We worked around it.
We were out there every Sunday.
I love how analog this joke is. That... I mean, how many times left in life do we have to hear the fake dial tone punch?
Paul, can you do this on a rotary phone next time? I assume you have one. I assume you keep a rotary phone and a phonograph and a monocle in your house at all times.
You can do that part from the Guns N' Roses song, too.
All right. We are a fanboy, and we are now going to leave. For the week. We'll be back. Till then, I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.
And I'm really sorry about Nelson last week.
You're not really, though. I'm not.
I am. It was in my head for half the week. It was awful.
Still in my head.
Oh, God.
Goodbye.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, like, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.